If another financial meltdown threatens, maybe next time we'll get a warning.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon, in for Jeremy Hobson. Everyone from bankers to the credit rating agencies have claimed nobody saw it coming, the global economic meltdown. There are plenty of critics who dispute that, but now international finance chiefs have agreed to a new early warning system. Money bosses from the 20 biggest economies met in Paris this weekend and came up with a plan to battle so-called global imbalances. Sounds a little wonky to me, so hopefully our European Bureau Chief Stephen Beard can help sort it all out. He's with us live from London, and let's start with those big, bad global imbalances. What's that mean, and why are they a worry, Stephen?
Trade imbalances is what we're talking about mainly here. Countries like the US importing a lot more than they export, while China, for example, does the opposite, exporting, for example, huge quantities of computers, electronic goods, and so on, while not importing as much. The argument is this helped create the financial crisis because China was awash with export earnings, lent billions to the US and Europe, which triggered a debt bubble here, which eventually burst.
So will this meeting in Paris keep that from happening again, though?
Well, the G20 agreed to draw up a list of what they call early warning indicators, things like trade deficits, budget deficits, and so on. And the idea is the G20 will monitor these indicators in the different countries. And when an indicator starts flashing red, the group will say to the country concerned, look, you've got a problem. But Steve Barrow of Standard Bank points out the countries that have a problem can't be forced to take action, raising a fundamental question about the whole process.
Will they feel sufficiently pressurized or embarrassed, if you like, by having those big imbalances and do something about it? And that really is the key issue here.
Nevertheless, he thinks this plan is a step forward because at least we'll have some specific targets that say if your deficit is 4 or 5% of GDP, that's a problem.
Marketplace's Europe correspondent Stephen Beard, thanks.
Okay, Bob.
Let's do the numbers. Wall Street will be closed for President's Day, but European markets are showing jitters from spreading unrest in the Middle East. London's FTSE has stumbled 0.25% this hour. The CAC 40 in Paris has slipped nearly 0.75%. Danish brewing giant Carlsberg has added to the flat taste. Its net income for the fourth quarter missed analysts' estimates. Wall Street capped last week with some new ideas from a government panel aimed at lessening the risk of another flash crash like the one last May 6th. There's a newly emerging question now that electronic trading is driving more exchanges to merge and become more interconnected. Will they get the technology right? Here's our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore.
Stock exchanges run on technology 24 hours a day, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily good at it. Consider this. The New York Stock Exchange merged with Paris's Euronext 4 years ago. They're still trying to get their computers to speak the same language. More mergers mean another bumpy ride, but not necessarily another flash crash, says Jamie Selway, an expert on trading systems for ITG.
I look at the flash crash, it didn't have anything to do with exchange systems per se.
Vlad Kondros, head of corporate strategy at trading firm LiquidNet, agrees. He says stock exchange mergers won't increase the chance of flash crashes.
The flash crash, one of the biggest problems was that the rules were inconsistent.
He means that each stock exchange has its own policies. One exchange can see a stock dropping too fast and hit a switch to stop it from trading, but it can keep trading elsewhere. That's a problem for regulators and stock exchange officials to fix. So getting the computers talking to each other may be the easy part. In New York, I'm Heidi Moore for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. And by CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 1 million tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
When you hear the words Internet Dating Conference, you might expect attendees to be experts at finding love. Well, in this case, the attendees are experts at finding customers, as reporter Karen Burkett tells us from WLRN in Miami.
The online dating industry is a lucrative one. Revenue has been flat in recent years, but the industry still generates over $1 billion annually in the U.S. Attendees of the iDate 2011 conference included entrepreneurs, programmers, sales reps. These experts are involved in millions of people's love lives.
What does your company know about love?
What do we know about love? We're behind the scenes. We're a back office solution.
The matches made at this conference are about the business side of internet dating. A programmer might find that one true investor. If things work out, a company will be launched. David Evans writes an industry blog called Online Dating Insider.
They will put that site up on the internet much faster than it took to start one, say, even 5 or 10 years ago.
A number of other companies that have nothing to do with romance were here to woo clients. iovation is a small firm that provides security for 22 dating websites, blocking identity thieves, spammers, and online predators. Royal Caribbean is trying to sell singles and couples cruises. Google wants dating websites to advertise with them and not their main competitor.
Well, Google is scared right now because they're seeing a lot of their advertising revenue going over to Facebook.
Paul Carrick-Brunson was a conference panelist. With all the talk of deals, he wonders if industry growth is flat because online dating isn't giving customers what their hearts desire.
I think that a challenge that this industry faces is that it is a love industry. And I just wonder how many of us are in it for the love, right, and the connection versus the bottom line.
In this industry, it seems there ain't no romance without finance. From Miami Beach, I'm Karen Burkett for Marketplace.
And a final note, pro-labor protesters in Wisconsin are getting a real mouthful. Seems there's a pizza joint a block from the Capitol in Madison, and it put up a Facebook page suggesting donations to help feed the crowds. They're protesting a Republican move to strip public workers of their collective bargaining rights. Well, not only have calls of support come in from dozens of states, the website Politico reports orders have been phoned in from as far as China and Egypt. You know, the Italians once colonized Libya, but no way of knowing if there's a pizza place in Libya that's been getting calls of support for protesters over there. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
If the center can't hold, things tend to fall apart.
The age of anxiety is characterized by a sense of a diminishing American ability to control events around the world.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Zero-sum future and a new economic order next time on Marketplace. Also, the day's business news. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.